California. She's a sponsor. She's a sponsee. She got it all going on. We could give a big round of applause for Tina A. from Hollister, California.
Hey guys, Tina Albert, alcoholic. Goodness, I'm really grateful to be here and be sober tonight. And welcome to those of you who are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, and congratulations to those of you who are celebrating milestones. Tammy, thank you for asking me to come and be with you guys this evening. And I think he introduced himself as our drunk uncle or something. Like, I had a couple of those. I don't know about you guys. But, Jim, thank you so much for that introduction. Gosh, you guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't hear anything else that I say in the next 40 minutes or thereabouts, I hope you hear that. Like, I love AA. And I would do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned early on when I came in here and got and stayed sober that love and service seem to be synonymous. And so, therefore, if I say that I love something, I do my best to serve it. And I can tell you that being of service has held me in good stead since the 10th day of October in 1984. And I did not come into AA to get and stay sober in 1984. I just came in here to take a little bit of a break because I was really tired. And I wanted to fix a couple things that I had broken, and then I wanted to drink some more because I couldn't imagine not drinking. You know what I mean? There's in A Vision for You, there's a line in there that says that we can't imagine a life with alcohol or without it. And we know loneliness such as few people do, and we're at that jumping off place. And I found myself at that jumping off place. I wasn't even quite sure I was at that jumping off place. I didn't know what that meant and what it looked like, but I found myself there on the 10th day of October in 1984. And I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and from that day to this, I have not found it necessary to pick up a drink of alcohol, to smoke any weed, to take any pills, or shoot any whatever. Like, I haven't taken anything that's affected me from the neck up since that day. And I'm super, super grateful for that. And that's not to say that some days I don't think that thought doesn't cross my mind, but I have not done anything that's affected me from the neck up since that day. And I've done that as a result of going to a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, being actively sponsored for the last 36 years and some change. I've had a couple of sponsors, and I'll talk about them in a little bit. I've taken the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsor other people, and I do my absolute best to never say no to a legitimate request from Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's held me in good stead. My first sponsor taught me how to serve you, and I'm super grateful for that. So I'm going to share with you guys in a general way what I used to be like and what happened and what I'm trying to be like today. I think that's important. I think that the only thing that I have of value in Alcoholics Anonymous is only my experience. I'm not a book thumper, but I kind of am, but I'm not going to thump you with it. I just have my experience of what I used to be like and what happened and what I'm trying to be like today. And I needed a drink a long time before I ever picked one up. I was a weird, odd, uncomfortable kid from the time that I can remember. And I was raised in Manhattan Beach in Southern California. And I went to school with all these little girls that were 5 foot tall, and they all had long flowing blonde hair and sparkly blue eyes and pretty little surfer chick tans. They looked like little perfect prepubescent Pamela Andersons. And I was 5 foot eight in the seventh grade, and I had long stringy reddish hair, buck teeth, and freckles. And I would look at these little girls and see perfection. And I looked in the mirror, and I felt like Pippi Longstocking on crack, just uncomfortable and weird and skinny and tall and just goofy. You know what I mean? I felt like I felt like everybody knew how to do the things that they were supposed to do as a little girl. They went to school and they did their homework and they had friends and they had play dates. And I was the kind of kid that would sit around the dinner table with my brothers and sisters and know that my mom loved them way more than she loved me. And I'm an only child. So that gives you a little peek about the way that my brain works. Like, I just think about me all the time. And I remember my friends would get new friends and I would have to beat up the new girl because I felt like I was in competition and I was like losing my status or something. I didn't know how to have relationships with other people. I was not good enough or smart enough or pretty enough. I just felt weird. And I remember in the seventh grade, I cut school. I went to my friend Carrie's house and we decided that we were going to drink scotch. And I opened the paper seal, we cracked it off the top of a fifth of scotch, and I put that bottle up to my lips. We didn't have any glass nor ice nor mixers. We just drank that scotch straight out of the bottle, and it burned all the way down, and it burned all the way back up. It burned when it flew out my nose. It was just gross, and I didn't want to drink any more of the scotch. I hated it. And I watched Carrie take a couple drinks off of the bottle and her face got pink and she started giggling and she wasn't worried about getting in trouble for ditching school. So I took the bottle from her and I chugged that scotch. I just held my breath. I plugged my nose. I chugged that scotch and just enough stayed in my belly before I had to inhale, that something magical happened for me. And Dr. Silkworth describes me perfectly in the doctor's opinion in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says that what we get is a sense of ease and comfort that comes at once when we take a drink. And I remember that day when I was 12 years old, sitting in Carrie's living room, drinking that scotch. And I got a sense of ease and comfort that came at once that scotch stayed down. And I loved the effect that I got from that drink of alcohol. And I was 12 years old, and I can tell you that I never took a social drink. I never drank normally. I never had the bright idea that I might like to just have a couple just to take the edge off. Like, I always more or less shot to get insanely drunk. And in the process of that, I did crazy, bizarre, tragic things while under the influence of alcohol that I would never, ever do. And I traded everything that I loved in my life for another sense of ease and comfort that I knew was going to come at once by taking a drink. And I drank myself into and out of middle school, Maricosta High School, Pacific Shores Continuation School, and I took the California High School Proficiency Exam halfway through my sophomore year in the 10th grade because I had no credits, and the counselor had called my mom in and told her, like, one of many people that told my poor mom, like, we don't know what's wrong with her, we can't make her do what she's supposed to do, and we suggest she take this test, and I graduated from high school when I was 16 years old, and I ran away from home on a pretty continuous basis because my mom just wanted me to come home at night, and I didn't want to. I would take a drink of alcohol, and all of a sudden, all bets were off. Not only could I not predict how much I was going to drink once I started to drink, I couldn't predict how long I was going to drink. I could no longer accurately predict my behavior. Like, absolutely whatever popped into my head that sounded like a good idea and I thought might prolong the party, I would do. And I started to destroy my life. And not only did I destroy my life, but I came into Alcoholics Anonymous singing that Alcoholics theme song, right? Like, my drinking really doesn't affect anybody but me. Like, it's my life. I'll do what I want. But the truth is, like, I destroyed the lives of everybody that loved me until I got sober. And unfortunately, for a little while after, I was sober, too, because, like, once I came into Alcoholics Anonymous this time and stopped drinking, like, the only thing that changed was I didn't have whiskey on my breath. But I was still a jerk in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous for quite some time. I remember one of the old-timers, when I got sober, used to say, like, you're a liar, cheat, and a thief, and just because you stop drinking doesn't mean you're all better. All you are is a sober liar and a cheat and a thief, and that rung true for me, you know what I mean? Like, if you sober up a horse thief, all you have is a sober horse thief. Like, my behavior doesn't change until I start to take these actions that are outlined in the big book and the 12 and 12 in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I found as a result of being sponsored and taking some really silly actions that didn't seem to make any sense whatsoever, they didn't seem to have any bearing whatsoever on the problems popping off in my life. I just did these crazy, ridiculous things, cause I got one of those sponsor thingies and he required me to take some sort of specific action or he wouldn't sponsor me. He was quite dictatorial and jerkly. But I started to take these actions and my life changed. And I'm super grateful for that. You know what I know at 36 years sober is that all I really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Man, I get one day sober based on the actions that I take in that one day. And sometimes my actions aren't so hot and I kind of slip sideways off the beam or sometimes it's been my experience that life just steps up and gives you a big old kick right in the butt. You know what I mean? And during those times, I haven't found it necessary to drink either. My first sponsor told me that we were going to take the steps and we were going to build a foundation that would weather any storm. And he said that in 1984. And I got to tell you, some storms have hit in the last 36 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And most recently, like, pardon me, the biggest storm, the worst thing, my greatest fear, has come to pass. And it's been my experience that there's nothing that's going to happen in my life that a drink of alcohol will fix. You know what I mean? And I, super grateful for that knowledge. But I took that little test in the sick when I was 16. I graduated from high school when I was 17. I accidentally ended up in United States Navy boot camp. I met this really handsome United States Marine and I gave him my phone number because I lived according to the principle, if you want what we have, a long time before you guys came up with it. And I found out quickly that this guy was a United States Marine Corps recruiter and he was not going to let me into his United States Marine Corps, but he took me to the Navy office and I took a little test and I did a little swearing thing and I found myself in Navy boot camp when I was 17 years old and I got drunk in boot camp and I almost got kicked out. I was a budding alcoholic. Our literature would describe me as scarcely more than a potential alcoholic. But I was a mess when I was 17 years old and then I was drunk in boot camp and I was detoxing in boot camp and I got in trouble and I met my commanding officer and I was almost discharged. And then I went to A school in Pensacola, Florida and I drank on a duty weekend. I hate it when I come into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I hear people say, just don't drink no matter what. I don't know about you guys, but I drink no matter what. I don't have the power of choice when it comes to drink. You know what I mean? And if the opportunity presents itself, sometimes no matter how great the necessity or the wish, I don't have what it takes to not drink. And if liquor is in front of me, I'm going to drink it. And I drank in A school. I met my second commanding officer. It was the second time I almost got kicked out. This time I lost a stripe and half my pay for a little while. And they sent me to my first duty station, which was Adak, Alaska, after I graduated from that A school. And I was secretary to the commanding officer of the Naval Security Group on that island. And in 1982, it was the Cold War era, and I was enlisted to be in Naval Intelligence. And I sat outside of Captain Shivik's desk, office at my desk, and every piece of classified intelligence that we would get from Russia would come across my desk, and I would type it all up and start coming back after my lunch break having a couple Long Island iced teas and start sending this classified information to the wrong people at the wrong commands, and the Navy frowns on that a little bit in case you weren't sure. And I had an encounter with Alcoholics Anonymous when I was on that island. They put me on Anabuse. I drank on Anabuse for four times. The first time I drank on Anabuse, I got so sick I was afraid I was going to die. And then I was afraid I wasn't. There's a line in the book that says that I'm unable at certain times to bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago, and that I'm without defense against that first drink. And I drank on Anabuse, and a couple weeks later I started thinking, like, I'm acclimated to this stuff, and maybe if I have a Coors Light, because that's almost water anyway, I'll be able to pull it off. And I lie to myself. Bill Wilson does this writing, and as Bill sees it, and he says that the deception of others is nearly always rooted in the deception of ourselves. And I lie to me so good, you guys. And I made the crazy sober decision, knowing precisely what was going to happen, to drink on that Anabuse again. And I got just as sick the second time and the third time. I drank myself into and out of a psychiatric unit in Anchorage, Alaska, a rehabilitation program in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and in 1983, I was discharged from the United States Navy a couple years early for failure to complete an alcoholic rehabilitation. And my discharge paper described me as a chronic alcoholic. And I was 18 years old. And I would have told anybody that was listening, I'm too young to be an alcoholic. Like, if I ever drink the way that you guys drink, that, like, I heard you talking in AA meetings, if I ever do the things that you do and drink the way that you drink, maybe I'll come back to AA, but I'm too young. And I've never been to jail, and I've never had a drunk driving, and I've never lost my children or had any divorces or lost any careers. I don't know what I thought the Navy was, but whatever. Like, I just, I can't see reality. My sponsor, my last sponsor before my current sponsor, who passed away in August, used to talk about alcoholism as being a disease of perception. And I just, I have these lenses on my glasses that disallow me the privilege of seeing life the way that it really is. I just don't see things quite right. And I was discharged from the military, and I swore, like, every single day for 15 months, I was just going to go to AA and do what you people said and try to pull my life out of the fire. And then every single day, about 12 or 1 o'clock, I would think, like, maybe a beer. You know what I mean? Because beer's what you drink when you're not drinking, for crying out loud. Like, I can't live my life on the natch. Like, I hate the way that I feel. I hate the way that I think. I can't stand the things that I remember doing. I burn with a guilt and a shame and a remorse that I know nothing will extinguish but Jack Daniel's whiskey. And I drink until something physically separates me from liquor, and then I stay stopped until the pain of being sober is so great that it requires me to drink again. There's a line in our book that says that this is repeated over and over again, right? That unless I can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of my recovery. And I did that over and over again, nearly every day for 15 months. And all of the things that I said I had never done, all of the things that separated me from the good folks in Alcoholics Anonymous, I did. I did over and over again. I was in every local jail in the South Bay. I spent a little bit of time in L.A. County Jail, which used to be Sybil Brand. We used to call it Sybil's Home for Wayward Women. But I was in L.A. County Jail for a little while. I was in fights all the time, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous at the ripe old age of 20. I'm the president and founder of Your Never Had a Legal Drink Club, and on the 10th day of October in 1984, I was living in a 1971 MG Midget, and I had no relationships left with anybody in my life. My mother had told me that I needed to leave her home and never come back, that her only daughter was dead, and I used to say that I couldn't imagine the kind of pain that I inflicted on my mom for her to make her only child leave her home, but I can tell you that I'm abundantly clear about the kind of pain that I inflicted in my mom that would necessitate her saying that to me. And I was singing that song, you guys, like, it's just my life. You know what I mean? If you know how crappy I feel on the inside, you would never ever tell me that alcohol was my problem. People had been telling me that my whole life, and booze has never been my problem, nor any of those other assorted party favors that I used to like to enhance my drinking with. None of that stuff has ever been my problem. My problem, my big book describes as a spiritual malady. It describes it as a an obscurity from the needed power to live. I'm blocked from the needed power to live, and I'm blocked from that power by what my literature calls calamity, pomp, and worship of other things, all of which somehow or another seem to involve me, which means I block me from the needed power to live. But on the 10th day of October in 1984, sitting in that little car with a stolen bottle of vodka in the passenger seat, I made the decision to call Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got out of the car and I put a dime in the payphone and I worked the best first, second, and third step that I've worked in 36 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Clancy used to say that that there's no dash in the first step. I used to think step one said that we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Somehow or another, tying the unmanageability to my powerlessness over alcohol. And what Clancy used to say is, pardon me, there's no and. There's no and in the first step. There's a dash. And that dash means end of one thought, beginning of a new thought. So step one essentially means that I can't drink successfully, and I can't not drink successfully either. I am powerless over alcohol, period. That my life has become unmanageable. And it's been my experience in 36 years sober that oftentimes what I need to do is look at the sober unmanageability in my life. Of course, my life is unmanageable when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, but my life is unmanageable sometimes in sobriety also. And that seems to be the crux of the problem, right? That seems to be like that peculiar mental blank spot or that strange mental twist that drives me back into drinking time and time again, even though I don't want to. Seemingly against my own will, I make the sober, crazy decision to pick up a drink of alcohol. And that day what I did was I got out of that car and I put a dime in the payphone. I called AA and I surrendered myself to you guys. And they sent me all the way across town to the Southwest Delano Club in Hawthorne. I walked into a 5:30 Wednesday night meeting. It was full of people that were like 86 to 132 years old, and I was 20. And I thought I had died and gone to hell. And I sat down, and I was smelly because I was homeless, and you guys sat next to me. You took turns because I was super stinky, but you sat next to me. And you brought me a coffee half a cup at a time with a lot of sugar in it. And a couple days later, you started feeding me orange juice and honey because I got really sick sitting right in your midst. And what I did was I detoxed in four meetings a day and hung out in the little Olano Club in the back between the meeting times. And I drank orange juice and honey, and I shook, and I threw up, and I stunk, and you guys were so incredibly kind to me. I got a sponsor, not because I wanted to take the steps and have a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. I got a sponsor because you guys just kept asking me if I had one, and I really just wanted you to shut up. So you told me the men work with the men and the women with the women, and the men will pat your butt and the women will save it. So I asked this guy named Paul Mattson to sponsor me, and he saved my life. He was this funky old hippie from the 60s, and he had gray hair and all this turquoise jewelry, and he spoke with this really Shakespearean English accent, even though he was from Inglewood. And God, I loved him so much. He sponsored me for the first 2 years that I was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he taught me by his example everything that I needed to know about being a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he took me through the steps to the best of his ability, to the best of a funny little old man that had no experience with some of the things that a girl of like me does in order to stay drunk and loaded. But he did his absolute best, and the thing that I loved about Paul is that he loved me so incredibly. He was so principled, and he didn't want anything for me but to see me get better. And he taught me how to serve Alcoholics Anonymous in the dumbest ways. Like, he used to make me get his coffee, cream and two sugars. And I used to think, what on earth does that have to do with staying sober? And what I learned is that getting that old man his coffee taught me to stop thinking about myself. And I can tell you guys that I would give my left arm to give him another cup of coffee. I remember I got up to the podium one time and I was going to share because I was a sharer. And I said, like, my name's Tina and I'm an alcoholic. And he stood up and said, that's all you know. Sit down now. And I was mortified, you guys. Like, how could you hurt me deeply, you know? I had 30 days and I got up and I was going to share some brilliance with you guys because I had been to rehabilitation programs and psychiatric units. I'd seen psychiatrists and psychologists. I knew all the ins and outs about the medical aspects of alcoholism that clearly you guys didn't know because you got sober with Moses, for crying out loud, like before the crust of the earth cooled. And I had all this new cutting edge information. I was going to share it with you. And I got up to the podium and I started to talk and he stood up and he said, you're finished now. And I had like, I looked across the room at my old timers, like, are you going to let him talk to me like that? And you guys were going, and I was devastated. You guys, I went into the kitchen and I was your coffee cup washer at the time. And this time I washed the ashtrays first and then I washed all your ceramic cups in the dirty water because whatever. Like, I am not going to allow you to treat me like that. You know, I was going to turn you into New York. And clearly maybe we'll just pull his sponsor license because he missed the lesson about loving me until I could learn to love myself, for crying out loud. He was a jerk. And and then he made me apologize for that at the podium. Like, bleh. But he taught me how to serve Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember I had a couple of years sober and they were going to do elections for the big 2040 plus group of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the Friday night meeting. And one of my favorite old timers, Tom, was the outgoing secretary. And they did some nominations and they nominated my heroes that have been sober like forever. And they nominated Terry and they nominated Paula Whittingham. She'd been sober for 30 some years and all of these grand old timer women, they nominated them to be secretary and then somebody nominated me. And I thought to myself, like, why would you do that? You know, you're not going to give me the meeting, right? You're going to humiliate me. And we went outside while you guys took the vote and my head's running and like, never going to get it. I'm just a loser or whatever. And then I'm going to have to leave because I can't be here after you guys do this to me. And we come back in and they say, we'd like to congratulate our new secretary, Tina. And I remember thinking, me? Like, oh my God, you're going to give me the thing that you love the most, the thing that you value the most, you're going to trust me with. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was unlovable and I was not trustworthy. And I never did what I said I was going to do. And I could not show up where I said I was going to show up. And those are all what Clancy used to call the spiritual principles that we learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful for these lessons. Paul passed away when I had 2 years sober and I thought I was going to have to leave AA. And I got another sponsor and her name was Connie. She sponsored me for a lot of years. And, I'm not one of those people that will tell you that the men work with the men and the women work with the women. I know it's a super good idea. I've had men sponsors, 3, and women sponsors, 2, because I'm on another one right now. But here's what I know, like when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, the ladies that were in my home group were incredible examples of what I might grow into one day. Maybe, just maybe. But I got to tell you, I am so grateful to the men in Alcoholics Anonymous that were around when I got sober, because what you did for me was, you demanded that I allow you to treat me like a lady. And I wasn't one, and I didn't know how, and I didn't think I wanted to learn that lesson. But you demanded that of me, and I am so incredibly grateful for your principled actions. You've taught me that. What I believe my value was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous had nothing to do with my value. And that was one of the greatest lessons that I've learned in here. And I continue to grow, right, guys? And I continue to learn new lessons along the way. Connie sponsored me for a bunch of years. And then I was sponsored by this, guy named Bill Kemple when I was here in Hollister for a couple of years and my life started to fall apart. I, I had these two kids and I got married in that order because you know how we do sometimes. And I built an incredible life in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I raised these two boys that I loved, oh my goodness, more than life itself. And I had this husband who was like the Prince Charming in my fairy tale. And we bought houses and motorcycles and boats and cars. And like we were living the dream. You know what I mean? And I'm living in Hollister here in, kind of Central California, and I jokingly say that I was the Clancine of the Central Valley. Like, we used to have these pool parties on Saturday and come over and I'd read the big book to you whether you wanted to hear that crap or not, and like, I'm gonna get you sober whether you want to be sober or not, like sponsoring like five generations of my lineage. And I love candlelight meetings because you guys would turn the lights off and I would glow in the dark. I was like super sober, you know what I mean? And and I remember I had about 21 years sober, and Chris was about 19 years sober, and he decided that the next step in his spiritual journey might be to prospect for the Hells Angels Motorcycle Club. And he rode off into the sunset with a bunch of greasy bikers, and my whole sober life fell apart. I lost my husband and I lost my home, and I gave my eldest born to the United States Navy because I'm super creative with that ninth step process. And, I figured that's how I would make my amends to the Navy. I'd just give them my eldest born, and Matthew ended up in Iraq. And I can tell you that he came back from Iraq a much different young man than the one that I sent over there. I mean, physically he was whole, but mentally and emotionally and spiritually it shattered him in ways, but it took him a long time to get over. But I'm 21 and a half years sober. I got my kid in Iraq, and I'm filled with this fear that I can't even describe to you, and my husband left, and I'm losing my house, and my little guy's hanging with these gangsters and breaking into cars and doing all kinds of dastardly crap, and I'm thinking like my whole sober life is falling apart, and I'm spiraling in this tsunami of self-pity, and I'm resentful against God, and I'm laying on the floor in the fetal position, like cursing God, like all I've done is serve Alcoholics Anonymous for 21 years and this is what I got, like screw you, I'll fix my life myself. In chapter 4 there's this line and it talks about those of us with agnostic inclinations or agnostic tendencies, and that's me, you guys. I don't know about you guys, but when my life is circling the drain, like most of the time I hang on for all I'm worth, and it's like falling off a horse and not letting go of the reins. Man, that sucker drags you right down the street. You know what I mean? And I'm 21 and a half years sober, and I'm losing my ever-loving mind in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I called Clancy. And I asked him to help me, and I can tell you guys that Clancy sponsored me for about 13 years. And I love him so much. I learned so many incredible lessons from that man, and the crazy thing is, like, he didn't require me to do anything that I wasn't already doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. As a matter of fact, like, my requirements for me to be a member in good standing of AA were more than Clancy expected from me. The difference is that I was one more time following advice and following direction and accepting advice from somebody other than myself, and the actions that I was taking were no longer my own idea, and I'm so incredibly grateful to him. What I learned from Clancy was how to be transparent one more time in all areas of my life with the sponsor, and goodness, my life changed so much. One of the things that I'm the most grateful for in here is the opportunity that I've had to walk with the giants in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so incredibly grateful for that. And Clance sponsored me for a long time, and Matthew came back from Iraq, as I said, a much different young man than the one I sent over there. And he spent 5 years homeless on the streets in Santa Barbara doing a little bit of recreational black tar heroin to treat his post-traumatic stress. And I can tell you that he sobered up in my home group September 2nd of 2014. Pardon me, I got to be sober and trudge with my son. And that is that is one of by far the greatest blessings I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous. I moved down to Southern California to get out of here because my life was a hot mess, and I introduced my youngest guy to my sobriety brother, who's the, like the closest thing to a sibling that I've had, and his name was Frank Jones, Sergeant Major Franklin Dennis Jones, and he was sober for God 1,001 years, and he was such a badass, and he mentored Dylan, and Dylan went into the Marine Corps, and he did 5 years enlisted, and got out honorably, and he just married his high school sweetheart a couple of years ago, and last weekend we moved him into his first house. He and his wife bought a home, and it's 5 minutes down the street from my mom and I. God, the relationship that I have with that kid is beyond compare. Like, I love him so much, and I'm so proud of him. And my mom's having some little memory issues, and so I'm taking her to the doctor, and I'm watching this progression of whatever the heck is going on happen. And my sons and I decided that what we might do, what might be the most prudent is to sell my home and my mom's home and move up here, move back to Hollister so that my mom and I could be near both of my boys and they would be able to help me, with her as things progress. And so my mom and I bought a house and I'm her caretaker. We live here and I get to be the daughter that she's always deserved. Whether I want to or not, that's a trick sometimes. But we put these houses on the market, right? And we decided we were going to move up here. And my sponsor passed away on August 24th. Clancy died on a Monday. And I got a new sponsor on that Wednesday. And that sponsor was my sobriety sister, Sharon Crane. And I fell into a sobriety family of a whole lot of women. And I thought, like, that is just entirely too much estrogen for me to tolerate. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. You know what I mean? So Clance died on Monday. I got Sharon on Wednesday. We listed my mom's house on Friday. And Friday afternoon, my oldest son was in a horrible motorcycle accident on Highway 17 in Scotts Valley. And for the next 69 days, he was in the surgical ICU in Santa Clara Valley Hospital. He had more surgeries than I can count, and he was so incredibly injured. And I can tell you that the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, that my experience of staying sober one day at a time, regardless of what's going on in my life, my ability to be transparent and follow through with the commitments that I have in AA, and you guys, carried me through like the absolute unthinkable. Maddie lost his leg and half of his pelvis and his hip, and he got infections and pneumonia and like one thing after the other. And what I got to do was advocate for my child in a way that I didn't know I was going to be able to do. You know what I mean? You guys have taught me to show up regardless of what's going on in my life and stand tall. You guys have taught me that I can go through absolutely anything with just a little bit of grace and dignity. And I didn't, I used to be that girl that would say, like, when the shit hits the fan, I don't have to have grace and dignity. Like, all I have to do is not drink. And sometimes the grace and dignity is going to come later. But the truth of the matter is, like, my experience is that I got to be Matt's mom. And that, is one of the greatest blessings that I've ever known. And I'm so grateful that he chose me to be his mom. And I'm so grateful that he waited to go until I was ready to let him go. And I remember on November 4th, I told him, like, if this is too much and you can't do this anymore, it's okay. And I left the hospital that day and his vitals started to plummet and he passed away November 5th. I remember Paul told me when I was new in AA that, if I'm to quit drinking, I can't have any lurking notions or reservations that someday I'm going to be able to drink again. And he asked me what those lurking notions and reservations might be. And I remember telling him 36 years ago that if I'm ever blessed to have a child, and something happens to that child, I'm not going to be able to stay. And it's been my experience that there's nothing in my life that a drink will fix. I'm so grateful that Maddie and I got to trudge together. Like, he was my favorite trudging buddy, and he lived with me for the first 5 years that he was sober, and I'm so proud of the man that you guys turned him into. God, I love this life in Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys, even when it hurts, and even when stuff sucks. Like, I love being sober, and I love this life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the most amazing thing happened through the course of those 69 days. I would go into the hospital and I would be mad at God and I would do whatever it is that I did when I was in there, and I would talk to the doctors and I would advocate for my son. And in the midst of the absolute unthinkable were these just magnificent fingerprints of the divine. And I'm so grateful that in the middle of the yuck, I still see God, right? And I was that girl that came in here with no God. And you guys have given me a relationship with a power greater than myself that carries me through everything in my life. If you're new or relatively new in Alcoholics Anonymous, the one thing that I know is that you don't ever have to drink again for the rest of your life, 24 hours at a time. And if you stay here with us, you can do anything you want to do, and you can have anything that you want to have. You can become anything that you want to become if you just stay here and lay hold of these spiritual principles that my literature tells me will solve all of my problems. And that has been my experience for 36 years. I love this way of life. And if I do nothing but serve you guys every day for the rest of my life, I could never repay you for the gifts you've given me. But I'll spend every day that I have left trying. Thank you so much for having me with you guys tonight.
Thank you, Snit. Can we have a round of applause for our speaker?